What if I'm just completely boring?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we recorded at Die Laughing with Ben Sandell. We talked about using atheism as a topic in comedy and using a light touch.
We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Tim Wick.
That's me.
And Molly Glover.
That is me. Who's Molly?
That's true facts. And today, our guest, as we record live at Die Laughing, is Ben Sandell.
Hello. Woo. I mean, we always record live.
Well, right. But
live
it's
at Die Laughing.
This is like a live event we're recording at, but not in front of an audience because... fuck the audience. No, wait, not it. That's not the one.
I'm trying, but there's a lot of them.
It would be really creepy if we were in front of an audience right now and this quiet.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be unexpected.
No,
I want to make that really clear.
Off-putting. I mean, we're not apropos of nothing.
I was emceeing from midnight to 5 a.m. The audience sometimes was this quiet.
So you guys, I got to tell you this story before we get into talking to Ben. Last night we recorded our podcast and we got done and I cleared everything and I went outside. And a little while after I went outside, our managing director was counting up money to take to the safe. And some guy came up. And he had been in there, and I think he'd been in there for our podcast.
Okay.
And he walked up and he said, you know, I was in there for a little while, and I want my money back because I just won't stand for this sort of thing.
Really?
So I don't want to say that it was us because I don't know that for sure.
It was us.
But I really want it to have been
us. Oh, my God. I hope it was us so bad.
And she was good. She just gave the money back.
Did I say cunt? I don't think I said cunt.
Well... we said a lot.
I mean, you certainly did now.
Yeah, but I mean, like, just in terms of statistical probability, you probably said
I was
cunt.
Just trying to think of, like, what we could have said that was so offensive, or if it was just the atheism in general. But
Yeah.
When did this happen?
It was while we were recording live last night.
Have you ever recorded live in front of a general audience, somebody who doesn't know...
No, I think it's always been us ahead of time, like at an event or... Convergence.
Skeptech.
Where the atheists can gather together in the darkness of
the corners of the internet. Yeah,
yeah. We've never done a surprise,
right?
Just kind of thing. Guerrilla recording.
To be fair,
show up somewhere.
This wasn't a surprise either. If he had paid any attention to the schedule and if he had seen that it said Geeks Without God,
you would think that would kind of give you some idea.
We don't call it like the religion podcast, which has the stinger of "Ha, gotcha."
So this is relevant to what we want to talk about today. We want to talk about relating your atheism in comedy or putting atheism in comedy. And I mean, sometimes, as we're in a country that's a religious majority, that maybe isn't received well sometimes, or sometimes you have to be delicate with how that's done.
Yeah, and I talked to Ben about this. He had a Fringe show 2 years ago, and it was a really, really funny show, and it was basically just his stand-up. Ben also writes, you've written some actual, you know, like plays and shit. But
plays and storytelling.
But you also do stand-up, and you did this show that was stand-up, and I don't know, it was about three-quarters of the way through the show, you did like 5 minutes about being an atheist. And I was like, wow. That you know, you said it. Because it's still unusual to me to see people saying, oh, by the way, I'm an atheist. Not like, hey, everybody, look at the atheist, but this is part of who I am, and I'm going to talk about it for a little bit. And I wanted to talk about how that is.
I feel like there's a lot of comedian agnostics. Or there's a lot of times people are like, I don't know what's up there. Let's make some jokes about religion, but maybe don't actually come out and say.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess technically I would be an agnostic, too, because you don't. If you, I mean, I know there's that sliver
we
of
round
there's
up.
A sliver of doubt. Yeah, so I round up. If I were to pick one thing, it would be atheism.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to pick one thing because you can't know for sure. But yeah, I definitely identify with atheism because you don't see.
It's for practical reasons.
Any evidence?
I the analogy of the other day. I'm like, okay, so if you had to make a bet. and there's this roulette wheel, and it's got 1,000 numbers on it, and one number is God, and the other 999 are no God, and you can win $1,000,000. What would you put your money on? And I would put my money on no God.
Yeah, right. But people give that argument, like, well, don't you want to be... What if you're wrong and you go to hell for eternity? Don't you want to just hedge your bets there?
So, Pascal's wager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, well, what if you're wrong and you're like worshiping Satan right now and you don't know? Yeah. You never know if you're wrong.
Or what if you're wrong and you're wasting your entire life working on the next one that you're not going to have?
Also, yeah.
It's like a cabin in the woods situation, like.
Yeah.
This whole time we've been drinking the blood of, you know, Cthulhu from the deep.
Also, I think
God is pretty badass in the Bible. He drowns everybody.
True.
And he's,
that's true.
I don't know.
Literally genocidal.
Yes. Yeah.
That's.
But he's all loving.
He loves genocide.
Eugene Meerman and his stand-up, he said, God is a 12-year-old boy with Asperger's. Like, just like the, like kind of like cold and uncaring sometimes, or not understanding how people work, and like, just like, if you read through the Bible and all that, it's just like, it's not a neurotypical, like, you have all these confusing feelings of puberty and...
That's why the Bible is such a tempting target for comedians, because comedians, all we do is point out... hypocrisies and things that are illogical, and so. But the thing is if the Bible is about. I don't want to sound insensitive here.
You can totally sound like insensitive.
The Bible is about as illogical and has as much contradictions as the airport. And you'll hear comedians talk about airports all the time because that's socially. Nobody ever goes like, "You can't talk. Yeah. That's a sacred subject to me. I worship the airport."
Yeah.
But if people didn't care about the Bible, there would be as much. Jokes in there as there is about the airport or anything else that comedians cover. It's just that we don't cover it as much because you lose if you're in front of a general crowd that's not there for you, you'll lose half the crowd.
Do you edit like if you're doing a set in I don't know you do comedy in a lot of different places you've been
rural around
a significant amount of the country in rural Wisconsin do you edit out some of that stuff?
Yeah, I try to because. I don't know how much I want to push it with an audience, particularly if they're religious, because for one, if people are getting the comfort from, I mean, like, if you're hearing this is ice in a glass of whiskey, and the whiskey is basically what fills my hole that was left empty from not believing in God. So I don't necessarily want to be like, I'm going to poke the holes in their logic and make them so they not believe, so then they have this hole too. If they're in life and they're going, if belief in God and religion is what's making them so they can not think about the fact that they're going to die, then I feel slightly bad about trying to take that away from them. You know, there's also the flip side of that, which is religion can lead to a lot of negative things in the world and violence. The approach that I've started to take on stage in comedy is basically from a Futurama episode called Godfellas.
Oh, yeah.
Where the God, quote-unquote God character, says you have to use a light touch. Nobody will know that you've done something well. Or
it's like arson.
If you've done something well, nobody... Oh, shit, what is the...
It's like if you do it right, no one will even know that you were trying.
Yes. Yeah. Being God is like committing an act of arson.
Yeah.
If you do it right, no one will even know you were there. Yeah. There's something like
that.
That's
when he has the colonies growing, one growing on his butt and when Ben was in space and he has the space and they're like, oh, grow father, you know, like, I pray all day, like, help me. And he tries to help, and by trying to help, he, like, destroys half the village.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He rotates a little in space and people get incinerated. Yeah, it's...
So the message of God is to be subtle.
Sure.
Which is not the God of the Bible.
No. But I think, okay, the quote is, if you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.
That's right.
That is it. And that's the approach I take with stand-up comedy, is that I don't want to talk to them about atheism and not God. I want to talk to them in a way that maybe gets them thinking along those lines. So, for example, I don't know if you... saw any of what I did today, but I
saw parts of it.
I have a whole bit about we tend to believe in adulthood, we tend to believe whatever it is that we believed when we were kids. So whatever it is the adults in our lives told us as kids is what we take into adulthood, believing, when we never really go back and reevaluate that with her adult brain. We don't. So basically, our belief systems are based around what our 8-year-old selves decided to adopt. Sure. And and the whole time when I'm writing this premise, I'm thinking about religion. Right. I'm thinking about, we believe in whatever your religion is, usually is whatever your parents' religion is.
Yeah.
And you don't, typically. You never break the cycle. You never have a point when you're 20 where you're like, I'm going to tear all these beliefs down and build up from the beginning using myself. You just take those beliefs. But instead of talking about religion, which will completely turn off half the crowd, and suddenly they'll have this block they won't listen to you. So I talk about other things. Other examples, like the statistic that you swallow 7 to 10 spiders in your sleep in a lifetime, which is a myth that so many people
believe. Oh my God, you guys, Molly, who's freaked out by spiders, you should have seen her face. Right,
I hate that made up statistic because people always try to say that when they find out I'm scared of spiders. And I'm like, bullshit. Bullshit, I swallow 7, 12 spiders in my lifetime. Bullshit, I would know.
did you ever believe that statistic?
No.
See,
I reject it on its face.
But like, to protect your sanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're an example of somebody who uses their adult brain to reevaluate. But that's what I talk about in the bit. I say that I was, because I didn't, I believed that statistic until my late 20s or 30 when I found out it was a myth, and I'm embarrassed I didn't just think about it as an adult.
Good.
And, because it's easy to punch holes in, like how would they know that you swallow 7 to 10 spiders?
Scientists
would have to have a control group of people that they videotaped sleeping for, and then they'd have to sit down and watch thousands of hours.
They would have to have been looking for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Somebody would have said, my hypothesis is human beings swallow 7 to 10 spiders in their lifetime, and now I need to test it. And you kind of go, what scientist out there would be so incapable of finding useful research?
Who's
going
to fund it, and what does it end up? How do we end up benefiting from knowing that?
It's like that stupid movie that came out that was based on the urban legend that after you die, your physical body weighs like 32 grams less than it did, and like scientists think that's the weight of the soul. They can't account for it. It's like, who's being weighed to the gram the moment before they die and then the moment afterward? Who's like, quickly, get me the scale that measures 180 pounds in grams?
They just go into hospitals, and that's what they're like, we'd like to talk to you because it seems clear you're going to die soon.
Right. Even my mom was like, science can't account for that. What is that then? And I'm like, Mom, I pointed that out, and she was like, oh. Oh yeah, no, you're right. You accept it. Because
how much time does it take
to child brain? Yeah.
And how much time does it take to figure out that that's unreasonable? I mean, it's like 5 seconds of critical thinking,
right?
And that's all it takes to understand that it's not very plausible to know.
And that sort of applies across the board with all these beliefs.
Yeah,
true.
And the thing is that we don't even take that 5 seconds. We don't want to, though.
No, we just want to believe it because it sounds cool.
It's cool, or it's,
you know, it's mystery. Like, we love mysteries.
The biggest challenge that I face as an atheist and a skeptic with my kids is that knowledge that you just talked about, that most people, whatever belief systems their parents have, is a belief system that they have when they grow up. And while I don't want my children to turn out as Christians, I don't want to feel as if I pushed them into being atheists. I want them to arrive at that conclusion by themselves, if in fact they arrive at that conclusion by themselves.
Yeah. You don't want faith-based atheists.
Right. I want people that are, if they're going to grow up and be atheists, I want them to be atheists because they've thought about it, because they've looked at the evidence, and because they've concluded that they agree with me.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I don't know if you watch the show The Americans, but they are...
It's super good.
They're Russian spies that have just been living in America this whole time, sleeper agents, but they have kids, and since they are, you know, devout Russians, they are atheists. The husband and wife, because that's what, you know, socialism was and communism. And so her daughter meets a girl and the girl takes her to a church group, and her daughter is getting really into the Bible and church, and, you know, Carrie Russell and Carrie Russell the mom is just like struggling, because to her it's like it's representative of like not just everything that's wrong with America, because, you know, they see that religion is the poison that's keeping the capitalism or whatever running, but also that it's like it's this fundamental disconnect between, you know, her and her daughter, And it's interesting. She, I thought she of
literally,
you.
That sounds interesting.
She literally turns to her husband at one point, and I think she says, like, where did we go wrong?
Yeah, where did we go wrong that she's reading that she's, the Bible? Like what she's just disgusted.
What did we not provide her with that she needs this? Like, she feels like a failure of a mother.
And to me, it's like what, and I haven't seen the show, but I'm just thinking what you failed to provide her mm-hmm. with was reasoning skills.
Yeah.
To think about why.
Well, and
is that exactly. the solution? And critical
the
thinking.
No, but for the daughter, it was comfort. She wanted a place to belong. She felt friendly. Sure. That's friendly
and,
comfort.
You know, she wants to be friends with the other girl. I mean, so there's social pressures there mm-hmm. and conforming yep. and I mean that's all about
there's
being
so
a teenager.
Much that goes into it.
I mean, I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but to my younger son, who actually recently has concluded he's an agnostic, so he's slowly coasting in the right direction, but who had for a long time said he believed very strongly in God, and it's the same thing that I say to him ever. I'm like, I don't care if you believe in God. I think that is completely fine. What I want you to understand is that nobody can tell you what God thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Because yep. they don't know.
Anyone who claims to be speaking on the behalf of deities is suspect.
They want yeah. something. They want money, or they want
yeah,
yeah. I just I want him to be suspicious. Vote. I am suspicious.
Yeah.
Of anybody who says I know, and not just because I'm an atheist. I've always been suspicious of anybody who says mm-hmm. I know what God thinks. To me, there's no conceivable way anybody could know that.
Red flag.
Yeah, it's just a red flag that person is not to be trusted.
Well, another thing that people will do is they'll be offended on behalf of God with comedians. So like, if I'll do a joke, but I don't do it as much as I used to. But if I do jokes about God, making fun of religion, it always fascinated me that people would be offended on behalf of God as if God couldn't take care of himself.
Right.
So yeah. I had a line that was like me attacking God is like a puppy attacking Paul Bunyan's foot. It's not blasphemous. It's cute. God can step on me whenever he wants. Yeah. So how insecure are you in your God that you think that a comedian is a threat?
Yeah,
that's like blasphemy laws.
Exactly, blasphemy laws are just it's just your way of proving to me that you don't think your God actually is omnipotent. Because you think you have to make it so that it's against the law for us to take his name in vain. Why doesn't he just take care of that?
Yeah. If your faith is really strong, other people not believing the same thing as you shouldn't be an issue because you have strong faith. Other you wouldn't be shaken by other people disagreeing with you, yeah. I feel.
Have you encountered other comedians that have a lot of, like actually come out as atheists in their act at all?
Well, I mean, George Carlin is a famous one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But the advantage he had is he had the audience was coming to him. So
right.
he wasn't playing for a general crowd.
Right.
So he was playing to an audience full of atheists themselves. So he could say, God isn't real, and it wouldn't kill the momentum of the show.
Yeah.
Or even if they were theists, they liked him so much that they didn't care. Yeah.
He's an angry guy. Oh, look at angry guy. He can shout and rant and whatever. They could discount that as a part of his demeanor. I think Ricky Gervais, in his stand-up, he talks about being an atheist. He's a pretty vocal mm-hmm. atheist.
They're a little bit more accepting of that in Britain, I think.
But, well, oh, yeah. sure.
A lot more accepting of it.
He did the movie Invention of Lying, which, I mean, there's a lot of religious commentary in there, and that's the essentially the premise of the movie is no one can lie, and one guy starts being able to lie. And one of the first things he does
the first lie he tells.
Establish an afterlife to comfort his dying mother. And eventually it becomes a religion that's based on his ability to lie in this world of only truth. And the movie was a flop.
Mm-hmm.
And even, I mean, so you can go to see him expecting his atheist comedy and his stand-up, but as soon as it goes over to that general audience that is like the movie-going public, mm-hmm. it's obviously an obstacle.
Well, and I think you look at the backlash from the Christian public against Noah because Aronofsky made a film that is, and I haven't seen it yet, but I know that he made a film that is, he doesn't use the word God, he uses the word creator. He implies apparently that the earth is way older. He implies that evolution happened.
Hmm.
In the film, I haven't seen it, but I've
you
read
mean
a lot
Superboat?
About it.
The film
yeah.
Superboat.
It's just like if they make 300 or when they make Clash of the Titans or any mythology movie, and that's why I think it's funny when people are so upset about it. Like atheist people who were like, oh, religious movies getting made. And it's like, well, it's, I mean, you went and saw, like, if it was about Greek gods, you wouldn't be as upset. Like, it's,
you know, yeah. I'm not upset knowing, because honestly, I always thought the story, I mean, I didn't believe it.
Well, sure, it's just,
but
it's
as a story, I think it was kind of a fun story. It's an interesting movie.
Oh, so many plot holes.
There are a lot of plot holes in fucking Sleeping Beauty, so.
Not as many.
Fucking Sleeping Beauty is a pretty straightforward movie.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
There's magic. Well, I suppose that God could shrink all the animals to fit into the. But then, if he can do that, then why not just have?
Well, yeah. Why does God kill off the Earth instead of just appearing to everybody on Earth and going, "You guys are really fucking up. Stop it." That would probably work.
Except for I created all of you and I gave you all your flaws, and so I'm really just punishing myself.
So heavy-handed.
Bitterness just came out of me right there.
God has so much guilt. Really, I think if we could psychoanalyze,
but he projects his guilt
onto us.
Yeah,
it's just that the idea that, like, I don't know, there is a great concept floated out, the idea that, like, if there was a God, right, and let's say, like, he did exist, like, atheists might even be the only ones who had actually received all the love they needed from God. It was like, because now you don't need it anymore. Like, you actually are a good person on your own, so you don't need the Bible anymore, and that was the whole point of God existing.
Yeah.
And like that, I that's the only way of, like, thinking of God existing I can handle, is that like, sure, no, he totally exists, and you're an atheist, and that's the point. Like, now that you don't believe in him, that's the point, because you don't need him anymore. And that was his whole goal, was to get you to be a good person on your own. Like,
but the real frustrating thing about that aspect is how many religious people think that atheists can't somehow have ethical beliefs.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Without religion, and I get so angry.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so you think if I tell the religious person that who believes that I am an atheist, they think that I'm a psychopath, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't you just go murder people?
Which says more about them than you.
Right.
Because they're just, the only thing not keeping them from murdering people is apparently that someone said don't.
The fear of hell.
Yeah, the fear of hell in a book.
So it's a false premise, because they say you get to pick and choose your morals, but they pick and choose which parts of the Bible they get. They can interpret literally, and which parts are, you know, history, and which parts are just completely ignored. And so, I mean, they're using their own ethics by picking and choosing which parts they agree on. So that it's not much different in terms of your ethics and values are still coming from within. Even if it's how you interpret an outside source.
You're intrinsically motivated. You are.
Right.
Everyone's morality is intrinsic, because you decide whether or not you agree. You read the Quran and you're like, nope, not for me.
You just made an ethical decision.
This one is the one I think is right.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, that's only for me. I think, nope, none of these books. I got it.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, another problem in not believing in evolution is that if you don't believe in evolution, then you lose that ability to look at ethical behavior actually growing out of nature.
Sure.
Which it does if you look at evolution and how animals start to form groups, and they go, oh, you know what? If we don't kill each other, we're much stronger.
Yeah.
And it's just a survival. It's just being good and being kind is basic to surviving. That's how we got as far as we did.
It's so predates religion.
It's, you know, a language is an extension of that. It's super extreme. I mean, being able to communicate ideas and being like, hey, you know, rather than just being social in terms of, like, wolves, you know, packs or anything like that, communicating ideas, that's a huge leap forward for us and, you know, being able to achieve things. I don't know, it's and then it works against us, too, because bad ideas spread, so.
Like religion.
Right.
Like
religion.
Well, so, yes, go on.
Well, now I just forgot what I was going to say.
Jeez, Tim.
Good. That was
Tim.
My plan.
Well, but this is I remember. This is all material. This is all topics that is something that I would like to talk about on stage as a comedian and do jokes about this. Like when I started out, I did more jokes like, if God is all powerful, then he created the devil. That means the devil is just God's form of masturbation, and that kind of I would do that kind of stuff. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because I have to ask myself, what's the point if people are just going to shut down
well, sure.
and leave?
if you're going to alienate yourself from your audience, then you know, because the goal is to make them laugh. I mean, you're a comedian, and if you're going to if a joke is going to literally turn them away from laughing at anything else you say, I mean, I can understand the need to avoid it.
Maybe we should do an atheism themed stand up like lab or something where it's like all of these stand up acts are going to be talking about religion and you know and
people know what to expect
and people know what to expect and then we can at least get some of these you know this material out. Of our system.
It's true.
We could make that happen at a Fearless Lab show. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's true, but in that case, nobody who's religious will show up to the show.
That's true. That is an echo chamber.
Yeah. Well, if you have an audience to work with, and people to reach, you can get that select group there. The internet's good for that.
Yeah.
That's going back to the thing about the light touch is that. The idea of talking about something that's not about religion that'll get them shut down, mm-hmm. but something that they're willing to entertain, like the spiders.
The spiders thing. Mm-hmm. And, it's really brilliant.
And I talk about, or talking about religion, but not talking about a specific Christian. Like I talk about how I became an atheist. I'll say that. And it pissed off my parents because they're both agnostics. and then I have this whole other bit. So it's like, and then I'm still keeping it in this realm away from Christianity, mm-hmm. away from, but then I talk about the cycle of belief. So it's still getting it into their head.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is just, all I want is people to think a little bit more about the things that the beliefs they just took for granted from childhood.
Amen.
you can't push people across a line from being a believer to being an atheist. It's a long walk, and what you want to do is you want to get people to think about it a little bit. And maybe if you get enough people to think about it a little bit, one or two of them will finally come to that conclusion that what they believe for a very long time has some really serious flaws. And maybe they don't stop being a Christian, but maybe they stop being a dick.
The big problem with that, the whole idea is that once somebody starts questioning something that they believe from childhood that their parents told them, like, oh, maybe gay marriage is okay, then they go, well, if that could be wrong, then what's to say that this other thing that I learned from these people are wrong, and now everything is put into question. I don't even know who I am anymore.
A lot of people go through that, like just complete and total
identity
problem. Yeah.
Good thing though there's Prozac.
And whiskey.
And right. Pornography.
So I think with that, we're going to move on to our five questions.
Jack off all my self-identity issues.
That's right. Let's rub them all out. Yeah. Tim, you want to start us off?
Yeah. What's the best movie you have seen in the last 30 days?
See, I've been watching so much TV lately. Netflix, like Game of Thrones Season 3 and all that. So, but I did. I thought about this. I watched one movie and I liked it, and it was called Blue is the Warmest Color.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
It's 3 hours long, but it goes by really fast if you just have the patience to just watch this relationship unfold. And it's basically just, it's a French movie. This is basically an analysis of a new love. Hmm. And it gets pornographic in the middle, but it sort of needs to get the feeling, the full scope new relationship.
And I think, it's unfortunate that it's pornographic because they're showing two characters having sex.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
That's the problem with the American mindset on movies is showing two people just having sex, which most everybody on Earth does at some point in their life.
Uh-huh.
It becomes pornographic because we're not supposed to think about
it. Show
a gutted corpse that got raped. Well, say explicitly, she was raped 18 times before they gutted her. Yeah. That's fine.
But yeah, showing this beautiful. But the thing is, though, I don't see like pornography as a bad thing. Like,
no,
that's not a dirty word to me.
No, it's not.
Sure, sure.
But I do understand what you're saying. Yeah. Is that it's when it's part of a story, it's no longer pornographic. It's telling a story.
Right.
Yeah, it's explicit. I guess
explicit's a good word.
Yeah. Sure.
Question two is: who is your favorite atheist character?
I have a feeling that this is a popular one. Sherlock Holmes.
Sure. No, nobody brings up Sherlock Holmes, which is interesting.
Maybe once, but we've
speculated.
We've talked about it.
We've talked about whether or not Sherlock Holmes on the new Sherlock is an atheist. And, the BBC. And that was absolutely confirmed in the last season.
Right.
Yeah.
But whether or not Sherlock Holmes, you're talking about like the Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Well, also this new Sherlock, Benedict Cumberbatch, he's he's atheist. I mean, I guess he doesn't explicitly say
he does in the third season. Have you seen season three yet?
I have. Does he say it?
Episode two of season three, he specifically states that religion is something that is meant to occupy the mind of the family idiot or something.
Mm-hmm. It's
an opiate of the masses, basically, kind of comment that he says. Yeah.
But Conan Doyle's character is also apparently, I mean, he's never, again, it's not explicit given the time he was writing, that's not a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's using a light touch.
But
he doesn't want to lose his audience.
He does say once or twice that he hasn't much use for religion and a few things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and so that time period, that kind of, you know, turn of the century era, there was so much mysticism, especially in London. I mean, there was all these finds from Egypt and all this archaeology that was happening that was actually quite destructive.
The irony
spiritualism.
Of course, is that Doyle was a huge mystic. He believed in mysticism, and Houdini had a famous feud over it, because Houdini would always be coming in and debunking these seances and these psychics, and Doyle, because he'd had, I believe it was his wife had died young, and he had this desperate desire to connect with his dead loved one, that he wanted to believe in these people, and Houdini would just keep coming and go, no, bullshit.
Well, that's what they prey on, is their desperate need to talk to your loved ones.
So it's interesting that you've got this person who is very much a mystic, but wrote this character that doesn't believe in God.
Kind of a debunker, I mean, by nature.
Well, if you want a underdog character, Lindsay Weir from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, yeah.
I believe is an atheist.
Yeah.
And I love her character. So.
She's great.
I love the actress, too.
Yeah.
Linda Cardellini.
Yeah.
She's on Mad Men now.
I'm
just in the middle of season. What is this?
I think you're in the middle of
whatever
Netflix,
came on Netflix.
Season 5,
yeah.
I think, or 6,
Sure.
7 starts soon. Something.
So the final season, actually. Yeah. So question 3 is, what's your geekiest hobby? What's the hobby that when you tell your friends about it, they say, that's pretty fucking geeky?
Well, the geekiest hobby I've ever taken part in is Magic the Gathering.
Yes!
But I stopped playing after 8th grade in the 90s. It would be like 1994 or 5. And now I have this deck that I thought was just a killer deck. And I brought it to Convergence last year. And they do not play the same Magic that they played in the 90s. And my deck is completely obsolete and worthless. And so I want to like have a tournament where everybody just comes. And if anything that was created after 1998...
Ice Age.
You want to play retro.
Bring your deck that you created when you were 13.
It's like I don't want to play any of these newfangled Wii U games. I want my fucking NES back.
Yeah.
Except with Magic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to play the new. This is a whole sorts of different rules.
There's
and
all kinds of new artifacts and
they process changes differently. Like actions are put on a stack that are done in reverse order. Resolved.
My deck feels like a VCR player.
Oh, sure.
Why do I even hold on to this anymore?
I
have all these... it's fire and death. Or red and black are my two.
I quit around when the Ice Age expansion came out, which would be mid to late
90s. Exactly when I started.
I sympathize. But then we had some friends at a convention. Like, you've never done a draft. You should try out a draft.
Yeah.
And we did a draft at Convergence a few years ago. It was fun. I didn't realize how time-consuming it would be. But you buy in closed packs, and you open a pack, take a card, pass them to your left, and everyone does the same, and then you do two more packs to the right. And you end up having to, like, build a deck from random cards that you're kind of handed by chance. But this way, it's whoever has the most money doesn't win.
Yeah.
And there's people who are on hand who are official Magic the Gathering, like, rules lawyer type people to, like, if you're kind of new to the game, to introduce you. And I think the buy-in is, like, 10 or 15 bucks. So I think it's a fun experience. And as someone who quit and came back to it, it was easy to get back into. And it only cost me, like, you know, 2 hours
$12.
They do it at Convergence every year. They do the draft. So that's totally worth
trying. It's a lot like smoking,
seems like learning. You have to relearn a lot of the rules.
Some of them.
How I felt when I went there up to the Magic tournament is I was like Bugs Bunny, or whatever the character is, just backing away.
Like,
I don't belong here anymore. Don't mind me.
Looks like someone's a little lost.
Elevator, please come up to the
floor. Okay, question number 4. What's your favorite sandwich?
It to be very specific.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we like specifics.
Caffrey's.
Oh, yeah.
And this is an unusual sandwich. And Zoe Benson introduced me to this. It's called the three pepper chicken sandwich. But I order it with vegetarian chicken.
Okay.
So, which is unusual. Chicken to me sometimes is great, sometimes it's just sort of gross. And in a sandwich, it kind of is gross to me. I'm not a vegetarian, but I order the vegetarian chicken, and then everything else is the same, mayo and everything with wheat. And so the three pepper chicken with vegetarian chicken, and then like a side of potato salad and coleslaw and chips is the perfect sandwich.
I love Caffrey's.
Caffrey's was like regular for my D&D group. We would get Caffrey's while we were throwing dice and stuff, like pretty much every Friday for a couple years.
Yeah, well, and they don't want pizza.
They deliver. Their sandwiches are hot. Like they make a fucking good Reuben.
They're good size. It's big portions.
Yeah,
it's
and the not, like, I'm really really picky about like potato salad, and they have good potato salad.
If anybody listening doesn't know where Caffrey's is, it's right next to Smitten Kitten.
Yeah, and you should eat there because it's amazing.
If you live in Minnesota, if you live in Malta, you're fucked. Sorry, man.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, that one guy in Malta.
All
right.
I forget that not everybody knows what the Smitten Kitten is. It's so famous in Twin Cities.
It's true. Question five, the final question, is what is the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about being an atheist? Or about you being an atheist?
We talked about it earlier. It's the, how do you, there is another, I don't want to name names. There's another comedian who is once in a while, there's Republican comedians and there's conservative comedians. Most comedians are, in fact, atheists, I think.
That seems like my experience.
Comedians
atheists,
just point out illogical
atheists
things.
Atheists are agnostics.
Yeah.
It seems that,
yeah.
It seems very
quite
common.
Quite a few.
But there's once in a while you'll get a conservative comedian who has then a conservative crowd, and this conservative, I was just at a comedy club with him, and he was talking about how we don't have he was talking about this Indian tribe that because they aren't religious they just murder each other, and it was like, he's like, you see, that's this is proof, and I think he just made this up. He's like, well, that's proof that if you don't have religion, you don't even care if you murder people.
Well, of course he made it up, because that's the biggest bullshit ever.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, find me a native tribe that doesn't have religion.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least, like, some form of animism or something.
Yeah. I mean, I realize it's a stand-up comic, but I'd still be, like, standing up going, citation needed.
Yeah.
Show this
but
to me.
I mean, he's one of these, and I have to be very careful.
Yeah.
He's one of these Bill O'Reilly.
He's not listening.
He's one of these kind of Bill O'Reilly personalities where you cannot get, you will be shouted at. You cannot.
No,
violence.
I'm a comedian. I wouldn't stand up and heckle somebody even if I think they're wrong. But
it's that thing is so frustrating to me. Is you have to argue that, no, in fact, I don't murder people because I'm an atheist.
And I don't want to.
That's by far the most common answer we get to the fifth question. By far.
Well, there's that study that came out a couple years ago that said the number one mistrusted people in America are atheists.
It was like behind terrorists.
Yeah.
They didn't say Muslim. They said terrorists.
Yeah, but atheists are less trustworthy.
It was like there was a question that was like, if you suspect, like, this is a suspected terrorist or an atheist, who would you rather leave your child with? And it was like, well, at least the suspected terrorist is probably Muslim. And at least I know he has faith in God and probably won't kill my kid.
Well, the frustrating thing about that is that every atheist I know are the best people I know. They're just they're good people, and it gets frustrating. Like, if you just got to know some atheists in your life, you'd realize they're
not
some
as
of the
atheists.
Best people.
Not as atheists. Not be like, oh, I'm going to get to know this atheist and be all magnanimous and shit that I know an atheist. It's just get to know them as people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, if people like you, Ben, are you know, doing your stand-up, and you have that mentality of that light touch, and they can get to know you as an atheist performer without your material all being anti-religious, then, I mean, that helps bridge that gap. If we get more of that in the world, just that approachability, just knowing an atheist is really...
It's one step at a time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Slowly, very slowly is going to move. But.
Well, thanks for... We really appreciate you making the time, taking some time out of Die Laughing to record with us and answer our questions.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, do you have a website, Ben, that people can find out about your upcoming stand-up?
I, in fact, do. BenSandell.com.
Awesome. There's a link to that.
Yeah.
S-A-N-D-E-L.
We'll definitely include that in the show notes. We've been Geeks of the God, recording live at Die Laughing 2014 at the Airport Hilton from Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and please take a minute to rate us on iTunes. We'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
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 Hey, the funny man said he's an atheist. Let's get him!
We're geeks, without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, without God.
Our secret handshake is Nick saying cunt.